White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is White Aryan Resistance. And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker in north central Indiana, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station. Yeah. And that's right next to our Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where we pick them up from all over the world, where Uncle Sam has left them brand new in most cases. 10 cents on the dollar, bring them in here, check them out, paint them up. You come on over here during the spring, summer, and fall and pick up something that you can make an impression on the government with. Yeah, you got to have an 18-wheeler, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Okay, it's a, what did I say? This is December 12, 2014, Freya's Day. Did I say that before? I forget now. Well, anyhow, it's going to be a nice day today. Cool, but nice. Going to be sunny day. We got a hard frost last night. Frost was on the pumpkin for sure. And like I tell you every time, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send all your donations for the radio show and other projects we work on. We've got some POWs we send some money to each month, and got about five or six of them now, and which they are very happy to get. Yeah, that's that. And go on up to resist.com and tell all your friends to go up there, and they can get a Harvard education on the race issue and download just about anything. You know, there's something I do all the time, been doing it for years, and I don't know whether it makes any effect at all or not, but I'd like for you to help me, and I've asked this before. Every time you get a magazine in or find a pile of magazines, rip all those postage paid cards out that you're supposed to send back to the manufacturer or whatever it is, and you can collect those pretty fast. And you put on the, take a felt pen on the back and put the non-equal sign or resist.com or whatever racial idea you want to put on there. And you can gather a whole bunch of those in a short time. And it doesn't cost you anything to send them. And it's perfectly legal to do it. And so I've got about 25 sitting on my kitchen table I'm going to mail today. And you can do the same thing. Anybody that says they can't do that, I mean, you know, a lot of times people don't do much, but if they can't do at least that, I don't know what to tell you. You go into a doctor's office or dentist's office and sit there and just tear them out of the magazine. Nobody will bother you because they think you're crazy, you know. I do it all the time whenever I go into a place like that. You can go into the library and even do it in the magazine section. You're not destroying the magazine, you're just taking the cards out, which nobody is going to use them anyhow. So do that. Just get you one big old felt pen or a stamp. You can have a stamp made too. White Aryan Resistance and the address and resist.com or any of that kind of stuff. I like to put on our non-equal sign on cards. And so people are going to start saying, where in the hell have they... start getting more and more of those, they start saying, where in the hell is that? What does that mean? What the hell does that mean? And sooner or later, somebody with a brain will tell them, well, it's obviously, it's an equal sign with a mark through it. Non-equal. You get it? Oh, thank you, boss. I didn't understand that.
I remember you. You're the one who made my dreams come true. A few kisses ago, I remember you. You're the one who said I love you too. I do. Didn't you know? I remember too a distant bell and stars that fell like rain out of the blue. When my life is through, and the angels ask me to recall the thrill of them all, then I shall tell them I remember you.
Well, this goes right along with the She-Wolves too. How about that? I dug out a movie last night. And it's called Beyond Hypothermia, which doesn't match the film as far as I can see. But anyhow, it's a Chinese film about a hit team, contract killers, two women. One was the one that picked out the deals and got the deals and got the money, and the other one, who was much younger, she looked to be about 20 years old, was the hit girl. And I'm going to play you a little thing from here that you might want to write down someplace.
What's wrong with you? Life is what matters to an assassin most. A name means nothing.
Perhaps to you.
You have to be sure to trust no one. For at least as long as we do business. Am I clear?
Yes. I know the drill. You can't have photos, you can't have a name, you can't have a past, you can't have friends, you can't have an identity, and you can't stay in one location for more than 3 months. You can only kill.
Well, that's good advice if you want to go into that kind of work, and it doesn't look like it's very romantic, like James Bond and people like that, but or Charles Bronson or whatever. But that was the first Asian Chinese movie I've seen with good audio dubbed properly, and it was a pretty damn good movie. And if you want to see shootouts, that movie's the one to see. I'm telling you, you want to see a guy go out of the room and knock. Killing about 10 guys at once. That's the movie. And the name again is Hypothermia. No, Beyond Hypothermia. Here's something that I don't think that all of you know about. Maybe some of you know about it before I do. We know about these FISA courts and things like that through Homeland Security. But there's a thing called Sneak and Peek that they've got. They call it sneak and peek, to where they can come into your house and spend a certain amount of time there, and then they have to get out, allegedly, and then they tell you later on that they were there. So they don't have to present a warrant for that. Evidently, they're getting it from these FISA courts. So essentially, that is the total end of privacy in your own home, because any agency of the government can simply perform a sneak and peek, come into your house for an hour or so, and then leave. And then they'll tell you about it 6 months later, or after they throw you in jail. So there you go. Another step in the police state. If you don't call that police state, I don't know what police state would be. Here's a lecture that might be interesting, even though it's a little off our ball diamond. That's the World Socialist website. And tomorrow at 1 o'clock, if you go to wsws.org/UTC, that's wsws.org/UTC, there's going to be a lecture by David North, who's recently published a book, The Russian Revolution, The Unfinished 20th Century. The interview will be moderated by WSWS reporters Andre Damon and Andrea Peters. Listeners will be able to submit questions via email and social media. The interview will be an opportunity for readers of the WSWS to listen to a critical discussion on the lessons of history and their relevance for the pressing political issues that confront the international working class today. Far from receding into an ever more distant past, North writes, the 20th century has acquired the character of a massive debt which no one knows how to pay off. North's book provides an integrated historical and theoretical understanding of the history of the 20th century. It examines such questions as Trotsky's struggle against the Stalinist degeneration of the Soviet Union, the nature of the October 1917 Russian Revolution, the impact of postmodernism on the writing of history, the social roots of the Holocaust, the crisis of American liberalism, and the role of right-wing intellectuals in U.S.-backed coup in Ukraine. To receive updates and information, well, you've got to register. So anyhow, you might want to tune that in. I'm going to try to tune it in. Well, I hope you know they're trying to dismantle a post office, and some people don't think that's a big deal, but it is a very big deal. And they've already done it in England. They sold off a 400 to 500 year old British postal service to private people, and they have resold it and made a fortune. Now they're going to try to do it in this country. So I want to run this little documentary sort of supporting the postal workers.
I learned when I came to the Postal Service was three words: the sanctity of the mail.
I'm a mailman, all right.
I'm Jay, and this is my dad. He always had a lot to say about his job at the post office.
I felt a feeling of accomplishment every day I came home from work.
After hearing the stories for 27 years and watching what he went through to keep his job, I set out to uncover if what happened to him was happening everywhere.
I loved my job when I went to work at the post office. It was a tough job.
You can actually see the people that you're touching, and I'm a people person, so it gives me a good feeling.
It was just a great place to work. But as time went on, it's almost like they've had their usefulness out of me, and it was time for me to go.
Don't talk to nobody. Deliver the mail as fast as you can. Cut the lawns. Climb over somebody's bushes. They actually told you that.
They're trying to get you to speed up, and if anything, get you to break safety measures. But they won't tell you that. It's big time stress.
I got to do everything right. If I do one thing wrong, the 99 things I did are negated.
My chest was a pumping and my head was about to pop.
Breaking news now, a murder-suicide at a postal facility. Authorities say that 7 people are dead.
The very phrase going postal, it's not accidental that it begins with the post office and then spreads like a cancer through the entire society.
But almost always it involves shooting someone in postal management or injustices that have been ongoing.
I was told by several postmasters and supervisors throughout my career, I will follow you till I catch you do something wrong.
They accused me of stealing $500 over a 10-year period and put me out of work.
At this time, I understand Bob is suspended without pay pending the outcome of a criminal investigation.
In this postal culture, you're the enemy if you speak up.
We'll find a way to get at you for opening your mouth.
I miss all my customers.
I know.
Because they were all friends after a while.
The stories are exactly the same, from one part of the country to the next.
I worry about someone going postal. I warned them. I put it in writing.
What if I'm at work that day and get caught in the crossfire?
And then, of course, we have this disaster Tuesday morning where Steve Spencer committed suicide in the bathroom of the annex.
He did not want to give in to them, but you can only take so much.
Even though we have this rough, crazy climate and culture inside there, you still get that mail out. The commitment is still there.
This is about saving the Postal Service. It's a part of the Constitution.
The post office belongs to us. Yeah. The post office belongs to the American people.
Yeah.
The whole thing is out of kilter right now. It all favors companies, corporations, and the working class people are being hurt.
If we want to be an innovative enterprise that's not in the layers of management, but it's in those frontline employees who are interacting with people every day.
Gone Postal is the story behind the story, from the workers who are fighting for change.
How much are you going to put up with before you finally say enough is enough?
I felt like a boxer who was on the canvas getting the 10 count.
What we're talking about is right. This is a corruption that's got to stop. And we have to stand up for what is right. We have to.
Well, there, I think it's a good thing to support the workers at the post office because it's one of the last original institutions in this country. And there's a hell of a lot of white people working with the mail. They want to privatize everything. Mail, water, the wind, everything. These predatory capitalists want to get it privatized. And once it's privatized, maybe you'll find out what being a serf really is. Well, I guess my Lawton Leith or maybe Craig Cobb or somebody's working hard working up there in North Dakota. Dickinson, North Dakota. That's not very far from Leith. Two incidents involving racism against black Americans, otherwise known as niggers, including racial slurs being carried over the Dickinson's Walmart intercom, boy, have been reported, according to Dickinson Police Detective Sergeant Kylan Clouser. The police received a harassment call at 7:45 a.m. Thursday from a 28-year-old Negro American woman who said she had been followed by a vehicle in the Walmart parking lot by a group of males. She didn't say whether they were white or black, but since they don't say they're white, black, they're... Well, I don't know. Who knows? Inside the store, the same group of males approached her and made comments about Ferguson, Missouri. The same suspects also got on the Walmart intercom system and made racist statements directed towards Negro Americans. The report stated, wow, I got to get to more of this article here, man. This is exciting. It goes all over the country on the internet, you know. These little deals, anytime a Negro stubs his toe. Okay. Officers identified the suspect's vehicle on video and are investigating the incidents and whether or not they are related. Clauser said the suspects in both cases have not been identified, but if we catch them, we're going to hang them from the goddamn flagpole out here at Walmart. Yeah. And just down the road, we have another story at Fargo, North Dakota. The victim of an assault more than 2 weeks ago at a downtown apartment building died Wednesday, turning the case into a homicide investigation, police said Thursday. Well, 54-year-old Mario Perez, and I see his picture here, he looks as wet as you can get. It don't make any difference whether he has a passport or whatever he's got. He's in white man's territory. So somebody slapped him around. Whoa. Wait a minute. The guy that's dead, evidently, is Clayton Lockwood Jr. He's the non-white. And the guy that killed him was Angel Jaimez. But he looks pretty white to me. So anyhow, things are really heating up out there in North Dakota. See what all that oil drilling brings you? All that high-paid wages and everything brings all the crap, just like it always did. The gold rush, any of those kind of things always bring lots of trouble, man. One more story from North Dakota. Fargo again. A nude woman blocked traffic on Interstate 94 Thursday afternoon, lying down in the middle of the eastbound lane and then casually walking to her parked car on the side of the road, according to a witness and police. Must be pretty damn cold up there to be laying on the road nude. Wow. I wonder what color she was. Hey, there's a new outfit on the web, and I saw a bumper sticker like this on a car in downtown metropolis Warsaw, Indiana. It's called mudlove.com. Yeah, so I wrote it down, went up there, and checked it out. It's one of these let's give everything to Negro Africa type operations. I'm sure it's connected with the church and all that, called, well, appropriately, Mud Love, because they are loving the muds. Well, here's a parade if you want to go to it, a demonstration this afternoon at 3 o'clock in Detroit town, man, in Detroit. And they're marching against both capitalism, racism, poverty, and whatever else they can figure out. That's this afternoon there in Detroit. If you don't live too far from Detroit, you might make it there and having a potluck and a discussion. Uh-huh. Oh, this kid's a winner. He put 25 cents in a vending machine at the Family Dollar store, and out pops a really nifty brass replica of a Nazi ring. Dumb brainwashed mother may sue, owing the adverse evil trauma it all caused a nigger kid. Yet a 12-year-old Aryan kid would have been elated. How about that? That was up in New York City. Anything can happen in New York. So if you see a kid walking down the street with a black kid with a Nazi ring on, well, you know where he got it, in the vending machine. Well, the Hebe's are after it again. Polish ban on kosher slaughter of animals is overturned. A Polish court has ruled that a ban on the ritual slaughter of animals for the needs of the Jewish community is unconstitutional. The Jewish community had challenged the ban introduced in 2013, saying it was discriminatory. Yeah, right. Now you get it. Of course it was discriminatory, because we don't like you. Well, here's another pervert, Christian pervert. Grand Rapids, Michigan. Christian radio host John Baglio, white man, operated beneath the radar as a married family man, a wedding photographer, a volunteer with the Kent County Sheriff's Department. camp counselor, and an overseas mission volunteer with children. Underneath the service, the expected father was a wolf of sheep's clothing, feeding a morbid and sadistic fascination with children, collecting pedophilic materials, rehearsing a sexual kidnapping fantasy with a child-sized mannequin, and meeting clandestinely in hotel rooms with young boys in bondage. There you go. Oh, that Christianity. Jesus likes that kind of stuff, I guess. Wait a minute, he never existed.
54-year-old John Ballio, seen here in circuit court in November, appeared again Thursday in federal court. He's already serving time for molesting a 12-year-old boy in Battle Creek back in April. Investigators call it a disturbing case.
This one, I'd say, probably is up there in the top three that we've seen here.
Homeland Security agents discovered Ballio while they were investigating Ronald Mosier. He's the person who arranged Ballio's meeting with the victim. Investigators called Ballio a wolf in sheep's clothing.
This guy was leading a double life. You know, everybody thought he was a model, role model citizen.
Ballio was a host at a Christian radio station. He was recently married and his wife was pregnant at the time of his arrest. Investigators found a storage unit with pornography and a bondage kit Ballio used on the boy.
Probably the most disturbing was the storage unit that contained all the clippings of missing children and how to get away with child pornography, and it contained that mobile rape kit.
Ballio pleaded guilty to sexual exploitation and possession of child pornography. U.S. Attorney Pat Miles says it's good that Ballio was taken off the street.
We really are pleased with this investigation and this conviction because it does stop the behavior, and it also sends the message to others who would engage in similar behavior that you will be found, you will be prosecuted, and you will serve a lengthy prison sentence.
Ballio was sentenced to 40 years in federal prison, and if he ever gets out, he'll be monitored for the rest of his life.
I wonder if there's a national collection and count on how many preachers and priests and so forth like that are actually arrested on pornography and pedophilia and all that kind of stuff. I'll bet it'd shock your mind. A lot of comment around the country on the new movie Exodus. Here's one that caught my attention. Christian Bale is correct. Moses is schizophrenic. He talks to a burning bush. Thanks to the awesome work of Dr. James Harris of Brigham Young University, it is now 100% confirmed that Yahweh is a snake god. Actually, Yahweh is a snake god and a tree goddess. They are Arabian fertility gods. Yahweh is the snake of the tree of life and the snake pole of Caduceus. This is the rod of Moses and the brass idol he asked the Hebrews to worship. Their symbol is the Yin Yang menorah. The base of the menorah is a snake's head and forked tongue. The tree branches are the Asher Arashes, hot bush tongued by Yah. This has been confirmed through the inscriptions in the Negev desert and pottery during Moses' time. The fellatio symbol on menorah is Yahweh through Proto-Canaanite or Old Negev script. Yah is also a barbaric snake, since he has sex with his mother, half-sister, daughter, grandmother, or granddaughter, and great-granddaughter, just as Abraham had sex with his half-sister Sarah. Abraham's nephew Lot also had sex with his daughters, but the Bible considers him to be righteous. Abraham also had sex with his maid, Hagar, just like Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. So everyone remembers him as Conan the Barbarian. Moses also saved 3,200 virgin girls as plunder for the Hebrews after killing thousands of their men. What a nice bunch of people we venerate. I mean, not me, but the bulk of the people in their Christian religion. They buy into that whole Old Testament, man. And those people are dirty, rotten, corrupt, sex maniac killers, everything you want to say. Actually, the Bible should be banned, and at least not let little children read it. Well, how do you like to sing all these Jew songs at Christmas time? At the rebirth of the sun, uh-huh. Christians don't seem to mind that so many beloved Christian songs were written by Jews. And Jews tend to reel off the list with pride. Of course, whenever they can snooker the goyim, White Christmas, Let It Snow, Santa Baby, I'll Be Home for Christmas, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, Silver Bells, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Those not mentioned here could fill an album. But why didn't the Jews write any similar iconic songs for their holiday that falls around Christmas time, Hanukkah, the Jewish Festival of Lights? Quote, I Have a Little Dreidel, unquote. Great song if you're 4 years old. There are reasons that Jews are good at Christmas songs and why so many of these songs became so popular. And there are reasons why Jews didn't write similarly catchy tunes for the Hanukkah or any other Jewish holiday. But first, a little music history. In the first half of the 20th century, Jews flocked to the music industry. It was one business where they didn't face overwhelming anti-Semitism, said Michael Feinstein, the Emmy Award-winning interpreter of American musical standards. Oh, yeah. White Christmas, written by Jewish lyricist Irving Berlin, topped the charts in 1942 and launched popular Christmas music, encouraging many others, Jews and non-Jews, to write more odes to the holiday. And although celebrating the birth of the fake Jesus was not something these Jewish songwriters would want to do, they could feel comfortable composing more secular Christmas singles. The Christmas songs that are popular are not about Jesus, but they're about sleigh bells and Santa and trappings of Christmas, Feinstein said. They're not religious songs. Okay. In their music and lyrics, Jews captured Christmas not only as a wonderful wintry time for family gatherings, but also an American holiday. What they drew on, said Rabbi Kenneth Cantor, an expert on Jews and the popular culture at Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion in Cincinnati. Boy, that's a mouthful. Was their background as children of the European-born Jews or as immigrants themselves in the case of Russian-born Berlin and others? Wow. Jewish songwriters own successful assimilation and gratitude to America pervades their mid-century Christmas and other songs and appealed to a country that wanted to feel brave and united as it fought World War II. Yeah, we're all together in this fight against the Germans, even though we're related to most of us. These songs made Christmas a kind of national celebration, almost patriotic celebration, Cantor said. The irreligious nature of these Christmas songs may not sit well with pious Christians, said Feinstein, who is Jewish and who cut a Michael Feinstein Christmas, among many other albums, but they are now part of the fabric of our larger culture, he said. And any singer who is a singer of American songbook will sing Christmas songs, said Feinstein. We all sing them. Yeah. Feinstein is in good Jewish company. Barbra Streisand made the Christmas album. Neil Diamond cut not only a Christmas album, but also a Christmas album volume 2. And then Cherry Cherry Christmas. This year, Idina Menzel, who started out singing at Bar Mitzvahs and is best known as the strong melodic voice in the hit movie Frozen, just came out with a very Christmassy Holiday Wishes. This list is far from exhaustive. Wow. What would we do without the Jews? Feinstein is a good Jewish company. Barbra Streisand made that album with him. Okay, there's a little more to this here. Let me find it. And how about Hanukkah songs? Well, first, singers want an audience And with Jews making up less than 2% of the U.S. population, plus 290 million pseudo-Jews, and Christians nearly 80%, the natural market for Hanukkah tunes is relatively tiny, though the story of Hanukkah is about religious freedom. Yeah, right. A theme Americans can relate to. Few know the tale of the ancient Maccabees, how they threw off their Hellenistic oppressors, that was our boys, and a drop of oil which miraculously lit their lamp for 8 days. Typical Jew bullshit. Oh, man. Feinstein, who was raised in a conservative synagogue in Columbus, Ohio, said many people have tried to get Feinstein, to lend his voice to a Hanukkah song, but he's just not interested. They usually are in a minor key, he said, and there isn't much imagery that one can put into a Hanukkah song compared to Christmas. There's a little, still a plenty of tuneful and moving Hanukkah songs, some of them in major keys, the rousing Al-Hanism, for example, but many are written in languages other than English, Hebrew, Yiddish, and Latino. And they're going to get much more airplay in the U.S. Well, anyhow, it goes on and on about this Hanukkah stuff, but there was a period of time in this country, in the 30s, I think, in the 20s, when the Jew moguls in Hollywood were trying to be more American than Americans. They bent over backwards to try to, at least on the surface, integrate. And so that's why you see a lot of those patriotic movies by Jews, especially earlier in the last century. And you should read An Empire of Their Own, which explains the whole thing. It's quite interesting, and it tells a lot of things that a lot of them don't want to be told, too. There was a big struggle in Hollywood between the pro-Nazi, pro-German side and the Jew side. And there was a big fight all during the 30s about that. And so also there was a discrimination between the Aryan-looking or tall Jew and the Eastern European typical-looking ugly Jew, the short little squat, maybe kinky-haired and so forth. Hitler talked about that. I've got a book here of his early times and what he was doing in Austria and people he ran around with. And he had a lot of Jew associates. Some he actually was in business with in his 20s, Hitler. They don't talk about that too much. There's a lot of stuff you don't know about that. But he discriminated against these swarthy Eastern European Jews, and he seemed to have pretty high regard for the taller, more Aryan, or more Germanic-looking Jews. There's quite a bit on that. I'll be talking to you about that one of these days, and I'll drive the Hollywood Nazis crazy, because it's from a book, Hitler, the Father of Israel, which basically Hitler created Israel. He had the biggest hand in creating Israel, just as much as any of the Zionists. And if you say, well, that was just an accident, well, you better think again. There's a lot about Hitler you don't know about. Of course, going into those bits and pieces of early Hitler's life and so forth, well, like I say, will drive the Hollywood Nazis up the wall and the pretend Nazis, and they'll go after me again. That Metzger, he's terrible. He should shut his mouth, man, because that Hitler, Uncle Hitler was our boy, man, and he wouldn't do anything wrong. Well, I see the famous but incompetent are probing the hanging death of a black North Carolina teen. The FBI is looking into the hanging of a black North Carolina teenager. William Barber, president of the North Carolina NAACP, told the newspaper, "Wow, you guys in the Ku Klux Klan, you better be good down there. You better not be naughty, hanging these black guys up on from a branch of a tree. You do that stuff, and the famous but incompetent are going to come down there after you." Well, this is interesting. About the money-loving Jew raised most recently by the owner of the Wigan Athletic Football Club. I'm not sure where that's at. Is, of course, centuries old. It also has a familiar face, from medieval manuscripts to the Elizabethan stage, to the pages of Dickens and Trollope, to the National Socialist propaganda. The figure of the duplicitous, avarice Jew, inevitably a usurer, a banker, a capitalist, tends to look the same in art, illustration, and film. He, and it's always he, is easily recognizable, displaying a hooked nose, full lips, heavy eyebrows, stubbly or beard chin, and swarthy complexion as he flourishes a bulging bag of coins. This ugly character serves to signal the Jew's ugly inner self, as well as to distinguish him from his innocent Gentile victims. Yet though Jews were called materialistic, worldly, and flesh-bound as far back as the earliest Christian writings, it took more than a millennium for the full-blown visual stereotype of the greedy Jew with his distinctive profile and dark coloring to develop. Moreover, when medieval images began to give shape to the materialistic Jew, they did not initially highlight the Jew's economic activities. Instead, the figure took varying forms and served varying purposes, changing as the concerns and needs of Christian society did. Okay. It was Paul who introduced the idea of the worldly materialistic Jew. St. Paul. Well, St. Paul was a Jew. He ought to know. Although Paul was himself a Jew, he insisted that the Jewish law no longer had to be followed literally. Christ's coming had ushered in a new era of spirit under which the Hebrew scriptures were to read and obeyed spiritually and metaphorically. Now, what were the Jews going to do to trump Jesus, a God-man? I mean, they had the thing pretty well under control, but how are they going to trump God coming down in a man? They were screwed from then on, I guess. When his fellow Jews objected, he accused them of being slaves to the flesh, body, and material things. This charge had nothing to do with the Jews' financial activities, sexual proclivities, or ethnic qualities. It was an argument over interpreting religious law, but it set the stage for the stereotype of the materialistic Jew. Well, you can follow them around and see the same thing. For many centuries, Christian authors would echo Paul in associating Jews with the world, the letter, and the flesh. But these phrases did not inspire any visual stereotypes. Early medieval art developed no anti-Jewish character and devised no sign for the alleged materialism of the Jew. Judaic figures first start to look different and worldly in the 12th century artworks. In stained glass windows, enameled objects, and manuscript illuminations, both biblical Hebrews and modern Jews are bearded and wear antique-looking pointed hats based on the headgear of the ancient Persian priests. These features symbolize their allegedly outdated nature and attachment ritual in action. In addition, Jews were often shown focusing erroneously on a physical materialistic sign while conspicuously missing a spiritual one. So either way is a bunch of baloney as far as I'm concerned. So, for example, in a window from the Abbey Church of St. Denis, the Israelites gazed reverently at the brazen serpent that healed them, fail to see the real giver of life rising out of the serpent's body, Christ on a cross. See, this is all religious insanity. It don't make any difference with the Jews or the Christians or who else. It's all insanity. And they're correct. Most of this has been a battle between the Jewish Christian church and the old-fashioned Jewish church. And a lot of the, it is true that most, a hell of a lot of the anti-Semitism just came out of that. This fight between Christianity to become the powerhouse over Judaism. And once they broke away, they used it all the time. So, I mean, you got to be honest about that. Most of it just didn't come from just regular people. Because regular people will look at a Jew, see if he's doing rotten things, and say, he's a rotten Jew. But if he's not really screwing people and being anti-white and all that kind of stuff, you leave him alone. They arose not because 12th century Jews were more literalistic and ritualistic than their early medieval forebears had been, but because Christians were. Christian scholars had begun studying the Bible in new ways, including by learning Hebrew, trying to understand the literal meaning of the text, and even consulting Jewish Bible experts. Experts. It's like a cartoon Bible. Hey, I know more about it than you do. Yeah. There was only 39 angels on the head of the pin.
Oh, no, there were 50.
Oh, yeah?
I counted 100 angels on the head of the pin.
They had also begun to decorate their churches with glorious, glittery imagery, drenched ritual implements, spurring some critics to complain that churches were starting to look like Jewish temples. Well, it came from the Jews. Why shouldn't they? Artwork like the St. Denis window were a way for art-loving Christians to have their cake and eat it too. They proclaimed that luxurious objects such as the brazen serpent were sanctioned by the Bible. But they also insisted that the Christian way of looking was different from the Jewish way of looking. Well, not for the first couple of centuries. I mean, the Bible wasn't even put down on paper until about the second or third century. More spiritual, less distracted by matter. Yeah, that's where they started getting away from this... got into this hating your body and hating the natural life and always at war with nature. And that was amplified under the Christian church. I mean, the Jews really did it, but they were pretty much in a minority doing it. But the Christians, boy, they really took it to a new level. Everything was evil. Everything was evil. You go to the moon? Oh, that's a devil's job, man. Discovering a cure for a disease. Oh, that's the devil doing that. The uses of the materialistic Jew didn't stop there. The explosion of church decoration was made possible by commercial revival. Well, people made money too. People make money off that stuff. Though Christians dominated economic activity throughout Europe, including the new practice of money lending, Jews were also deeply involved. Yeah, right. And the king had these Jews working as his tax collectors. And they'd be going out there and they'd be clipping the coin of the realm, scraping off part of the silver or gold and stealing it. And finally the king get pissed off and he'd turn the serfs loose on the Jews. He'd let them... They always wanted to go after the Jews, but most of the time the king's men were around and didn't let them do it. But if the king got real pissed at the Jews for their practices, money practicing, or they're trying to screw the king, king wanted it all. And anyhow, the serfs would rise up, the peasants, and kick the shit out of the Jews for a few days until the king's army rushed out there to save the Jews. And that was a lesson to the Jews. Don't try to screw the king. Jewish as well as Christian merchants transported goods up and down the roads and rivers of northern Europe. The Jews as well as the Christians acted as money changers, mentors, lenders, and toll collectors. Some churchmen worried about the morality of the new money-based economy. You see, in pagan society, in heathen society, it didn't work that way. You know, they didn't use money, to my knowledge. They bartered. And so it's pretty hard to... it's pretty easy to see that somebody's trying to screw you if you're looking at a horse. I mean, you want to kind of trade a horse for a cow. Say, well, that some bitch and horse couldn't run five feet. That's a sway back old horse. You're not pawning that off on me. Get on out of here. We don't have a deal. Can't do that with money. In order to discourage Christians from chasing after profit, motorists or moralists played up the connection between Jewishness, greed, and sin, which they all were guilty of. They all were, Christ, look at the 30 years war, the 100 years war, all that, simply over bullshit arguments between churches. And I don't know where the Jews went. They got right in the middle of that. Art helped. Well, you had Torquemada down there in Spain, who was torturing Jews all over the place. He was a Jew. Some of the worst of persecutors of the Jews have been Jews. Art helped Christians displace these problems onto materialistic Jews. Hey, it's them Jews over there. I ain't doing it. Whose worldliness and fleshliness was underscored by luxurious clothing and exaggeration and facial features, especially large hooked nose. You know, a lot of Scotch people have large hooked nose. I mean, there's a lot of people in the European society that got pretty big nose. By the end of the Middle Ages, as the pointy beard, fur-lined captain wearing follower of Antichrist in Luca Signorelli's fresco of 1500 attests, the figure of the dark-faced, hook-nosed Jew had become readily recognizable and universally loathed, the embodiment of almost every depravity plaguing the Western world. Well, you see, that's the right wing still got that everything that happens bad is a Jew. And you're not going to win in that argument, because you got to take it more a step at a time. Judaism's bullshit, Christianity's bullshit, Islam is bullshit, and the people who practice it that are criminals and corrupt should be taken care of. Don't make any difference. Jew, Christian, Muslim, all like that, you know. But that don't make the right wing happy, because it's just the Jews. Christians are okay, because most white people have been Christian. So they're okay, just get the Jews. The point of such images from their making perspective was to improve Christian morals by associating sin and impiety with hideous and hateful figures. Well, yeah, ugliness... is something that people discriminate about. And most men don't go out intentionally trying to marry an ugly woman any more than a racial group would want to combine with another ugly racial group. Or they shouldn't, but they are today, of course, with the blacks. I mean, you know, to an Aryan, to a good-looking Aryan woman, an Aryan man should be appalled at the Negro race. You get a mulatto, sometimes they don't look too bad, but and that's what's dangerous about it. But to these Negroid apes that control the streets, at least in part of the cities, any healthy white person, call them an Aryan or what, it's repugnant. Don't want to be around them. Don't want them in my town. Don't want them in my neighborhood. Get them out of here. But they don't. That shows you how brainwashing has been effective. And it all started with
all men are created equal, right? In our Declaration of Independence. A bunch of slave-owning capitalists are writing down, all men are created equal. Well, of course, they were white racists. That's the only way they could say something like that without tongue-in-cheek. If they all men are created equal, then there were how many hundreds of thousands, maybe million slaves, black slaves? Well, I guess if that's equal, I don't want no part of that equal, you know. The Jew had become readily recognizable and universally loathed, an embodiment of almost every depravity plaguing the Western world. Well, that's not all the Jews. I mean, you know, the Jews had been... When the Jews got out of the desert, got up into Eastern Europe, and they were out there in the Pale of the Settlement, of course, even before, back when they so-called escaped the Egyptians, they said, even in the Bible, a mixed multitude. You know, mixed multitude means to me it was a multiracial bunch of groups. So they were over there in Eastern Europe, interbreeding in this ethnic situation. And they developed some very grotesque looks. But some came from other areas, and I'm not an expert on this, but I do know that there's a hell of a lot of Jews in Europe that you can't tell any different than a good-looking white person. I mean, you can look at the videos from Israel, per se, because it's basically, like the Muslims say, it's a European outpost. And we've spent $721 billion making it a prosperous place. But they show the beaches and everything, people walking down the street. You see all kinds of people there that you could not tell are a Jew unless they told you, if they were walking down the street of any city in this country or Europe. And they'd have to tell you, because they look just as white, just as Aryan as any other German or Western European. That's why so many Nazis, Hollywood Nazis, get fooled by infiltrators. And there's been several of them in my time who got infiltrated by big-time Jews, and these Nazis accepted them as white and Aryan, because they did look white and Aryan. That's why the Gestapo, when they were in France, hired French whores to get secrets. They didn't hire French whores that looked like kikes. They hired French whores that looked Aryan and white. And probably genetically they were. They might have had somebody in the family in the Jewish church, the synagogue. But anyhow, the point of such images, from their maker's perspective, was to improve Christian morals by associating sin and impiety with hideous and hateful figures. I already read that. Stick with me. I'm almost done here. Christians were not notably purer or less avarice than they had been 300 years earlier, but they were unquestionably more anti-Jewish. Art did not affect this change alone, of course, but it played a powerful role in the process. That's an interesting article, I think. Well, I mean, you got to be honest about this. Now, when I was in L.A., and I worked for Douglas Aircraft, and then I got out of Douglas Aircraft and went back on the regular job market. I worked for a couple of Jews that had a big store in South Bay, up in Playa del Palo Mesa. No, what the hell was it? Well, anyhow, it was down there, nice area, and they treated me fine. They paid me more than the going rate. I never had a bit of trouble with them. So now what am I supposed to say? I want to gas them? Their social life seemed like about everybody else's.
So you got to separate the wheat from the chaff here when you come up with this stuff. And when the right wing says, "Well, we're going to save white Christians," I don't see it that way, because I see the majority of the rotten crap going on is Jewish Christianity, because there's a lot more of them. More of our race are involved in Christ insanity, and that's where more of the dirt happens. The Jews clamor to get key positions because they're a small population compared to the rest. So obviously, to get some power, they're going to try to get key positions, and they do. And Jewish Christians allow them to do it. And so most of the crap is about Jews and Christians, Judaism and Christianity, and even Islam is all this bullshit of religion. Instead of just judging on race only, which I do. I think that has to be the most important thing. If a person looks white, acts white, thinks white, walks white, eats white, and they're white. I mean, you know, if you can quit being a Baptist, why can't you quit being a Jew? I know a lot of guys who admit they were Jews or Jews in the family. Well, so what? You go back a few generations, you may have a black person in your family tree, but it breeds out. It breeds out. And the South had rules along those lines, because if you tried to hold it to the absolute letter of the law, you couldn't do anything. Couldn't do anything. You know, they don't say Catholic is a race. They don't say Jehovah's Witness is a race. I mean, they don't say the Greek Orthodox is a race. So why do you get all fouled up with this Jews is a race? Because they're not a race. They're just the opposite of a race. They're a combination of all the races and all the hybrids in between. That's their problem. They would like to be Aryan. And some of it through miscegenation get there. I mean, to where they are, for all practical purposes, white Aryans, you know. And that's one of the reasons, I think, for the big thing that blew up in Germany. I think Hitler sort of stumbled into it, and then he didn't have a way out, so he kept moving it. He wanted to get all the Jews out of Germany. But how do you separate all these people that maybe had an ancestor generations back that were Jew? Well, according to the rules, they were supposed to go. Well, bullshit. Half of those people didn't even know they had anybody that far back that were Jew. So they come up with a cockamamie idea that to get them all out of Germany, we just got to push them east, like the Russians used to push them west. We don't want them. You can have them. They're too kike for me. Anyhow, and like that. So that type of movement, and during a war for the survival of Germany, they're going to waste all that on that program, which turned, really, propaganda-wise, turned a tremendous amount of people against Germany. Why didn't they? Why didn't Hitler wait till he won the war? And he could have won the war. A couple of things he didn't do, but he could have won the war pretty easily. Why would he drain off all that energy, drain all those gas and oil and everything, to take all these Jews down there? Well, I think there's a story here. I think that was that one of the big programs there was to get the Jews over to Palestine and Israel. And so I'm beginning to think that the whole operation was, in the end, to create a strong Israel. Now, I hope you see sort of where I'm going. I'm going to go a little farther on that as time goes on, and there's people out there going to hate my guts even more than they do. But I look for truth, as I can see it, wherever it's at. That's my motto. So I'll be back tomorrow. I think we'll have Sling Blade on again tomorrow, but the first of the week. I think we'll go into some of this stuff and drive the Hollywood Nazis crazy. 14-5. This is Terrible Tommy off and clear. And keep your pie holes shut and watch out for this sneak and peek deal with the federal agencies, so they can come into your house when you're not there without a proper warrant, and look all around, and as long as they're not there too long, it's legal. Well, set up little things around your house that you'll see that somebody's been there. I saw a neat one last night in this Chinese movie. Just simply a woman put a big glass bottle in front of her door, so when anybody came in, they tipped the bottle over. It made a lot of noise. Now, isn't that's ingenious? It's simple, you know, your front door, your back door. When you're gone for any length of time, put a bottle or something there that when they open the door, it's going to go crash, you know. And you'll see when you come back the bottle's tipped over, or if you're there, you'll have time to get a hold of your gun and shoot the shit out of them. Bye-bye.